The voice that you just heard was our guest for this evening, Royce. They call me Sauce Handy. And this is Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our co-host, Professor AJ Lowe.
Whoop, whoop.
And tonight we are excited to talk to one of my favorite artists, actually. I don't know that I've told him that, but I really feel his flow. But he is Royce Sauce Handy, who is an artist and entrepreneur. I just broke it down that way because he does so many different things, but I figure that's a easy enough thing for people to take away with. And we're talking about protect ourselves, and the subject is on us taking ownership of protecting ourselves, but that is actually the name of Sauce's latest grassroots endeavor. Sauce is the founder of the grassroots movement Protect Ourselves. Hey, Sauce.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, thanks so much for calling in and giving us a track that we can play. Be Real Black for me.
Mm-hmm.
One of your latest?
Yep. I did that with Mike Dupree. He's a Kansas City producer. He put out instrumentals for artists and videographers or whatever to use.
Oh, wow.
In light of... Uh-oh.
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay.
He put that out so that people can download and use for videos or whatever they wanted to. And I saw a guy who used it for like a promo video about the protests and stuff. So I said, I'm going to make a song. And Mike really liked it. So we went ahead and dropped it. I dropped it for you or whatever. And it came out pretty good.
Yeah, nice. I'm feeling it. Go ahead, Professor.
No, I was just going to say I'm feeling it as well.
Yeah. One of the things that I want you to start us off with for tonight is how you came about with Protect Ourselves and what it really is for our audience. And I know you have four different pillars. I want us to walk through those different pillars as well, but just give us a base understanding of what Protect Ourselves is.
Yeah, so Protect Ourselves basically is it's going to be a neighborhood by neighborhood resource influenced by asset-based community development that locates people that are already doing the work, people who already have the skills, people that are already doing the things out in our communities and our immediate neighborhoods that we need to survive outside of systems that continue to abuse us. So that's what protecting ourselves is. It's growing our own food. It's providing our own ways to capital, to whatever it is. Protecting ourselves literally, physically, mentally, spiritually, all of those things as well. And it kind of came about, I had just been going back and forth in my mind. I've been doing a lot of work of this nature for some years now. And I just been going back and forth in my mind about what I want to do, especially with the new uprising and the movement. And I just been wondering, like, should I do something? Should I just join something else? Or what should I do now that I'm not on the road? I'm not on the road, so I'm not making no music. Oh, I'm making music, but I'm not performing. So I'm at home a lot more. And I'm just like, what can I do? So I've been talking to a few of local artists and organizers about movements that they've been doing. And I went to a gathering that Casey Tenet had that was very inspirational for me. They needed a DJ to play some music, so I brought my sound equipment out and played some music. They had a block party for a Tenet group that organized themselves here in Kansas City and basically fought back against a landlord that was negligent of their humanity, basically. But they had problems with no central air, bed bugs, simple stuff like that. And they organized and created a union and fought back, and after about 2 days of media coverage and stuff like that, the landlord management group flew out to Kansas City to meet with them. And it just inspired me to, like, we can organize and protect ourselves. And when I was at UMKC, I was up under urban planning and urban studies department, and I learned so much about organizing within the community and learning that the community has to do it themselves. No one can do it for them. So that's where Protect Ourselves came from.
Appreciate that. And one of the things, even just saying that, you know, the community has to do it themselves, because you talk about asset-based community development and looking at what we have as opposed to starting out from, well, we don't have this, and, you know, here are the issues or the problems. But there is a lot we have when we look at it. It's starting with our own selves. But something that there is a group based out of California. They're called Critical Resistance, and they promote abolishing the police, but one of the things that they talk about is policing itself is the issue. And they talk about how we can get back to community, basic. You know, there's like, who's told you that you needed to be police? Like, who told you you didn't, you know, how did we get so far away from being able to resolve our own conflicts and do different things that help us protect ourselves with, you know, as knowing our neighbors. And so I want you to break down what the four different pillars are. I know you talk about defense, education, sufficiency, and investment. So let's walk through those to understand what's holding up protect ourselves.
Right.
Yeah, so the four pillars are defense, education, sufficiency, and investment. And up under there, I started with four things, but there can be various things just depending on, you know, how deep we can go with it. But with defense, we're looking at self-defense, survival defense, neighborhood, and conflict resolution. So with self-defense, literally, we want to be able to teach women, children, men, of course, how to protect themselves, how to legally protect their homes. What are your lawful rights as far as concealed carry? What are your lawful rights as far as, you know, any type of weaponry? And then with survival, we wanna look at learning urban survival first of all, but also just survival in general. If you're cut, if you're shot, if you can't breathe or whatever, we want to look at ways that we can help that. If you're lost in the woods and you need to start a fire or whatever it is, we want to be able to have our community that's been urbanized, you know, to a point where we're dependent to be able to fix those things ourselves. And then neighborhood defense. So think about, like, you know, neighborhood watch groups or something like that, but like literally knowing everything that goes on and in out of the neighborhood. And when you see something that's foreign that is threatening your neighborhood can be able to defend itself in whatever capacity that it needs to. So when you look at I forgot the exact neighborhood group, but they helped bring the Aldis down on 39th and Prospect.
Oh,
that's not Ivanhoe, is it?
The neighborhood.
Is Ivanhoe neighborhood?
Ivanhoe.
Yeah.
Okay. We studied them and looked at how they got started, and, you know, people trying to get drug houses out of their communities. Like, you have to have an organized front to be able to do something of that nature, but knowing what's going on in your community, being that invested in your immediate neighborhood to be able to defend it. Also, lastly, conflict resolution. Just looking at better ways that we can de-escalate everyday human issues. I mean, people are going to argue. People are going to do something that someone else doesn't like. How can we address those situations in a way where we know, everybody knows that we're not going to reach for a gun to kill somebody over some argument, or we're not going to take something that could simply be cleared up with communication, or my bad, I'm sorry, or whatever, and escalate it to a level where it's you know, somebody's at harm. So that's with the defense part. The education part is life education. Just being able to learn valuable wisdom from people who have already lived life and who have lived a full life, mm-hmm. and they can teach us. There's a huge disconnect, and I don't want to overstate it, because I know a lot has been done to make this disconnect, but there's a disconnect between the generations from how I heard about how my parents grew up to how I grew up to how now we're growing up in the internet age where, you know, you don't even know the person that lives next door to you. You know what I mean? So it's like, we want to be able to take that and you learn life on life. Like, someone's life, the way they live, the things that they've done, the things that they see can educate you on what you can do when you face those things. Home education, This is, goes into home ownership. This goes into, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how do I remodel my home? It's everything about the home, the structure, just everything about home life, and education. Not necessarily home schooling, but this is just specifically the home. School education is knowing that the education system is not equipped to teach us everything that we need to learn, to be educated, to navigate through the world. We know that already because our schools are underfunded compared to other school districts. And also that goes into homeschooling and having educational things at home that children and students can learn when they're outside of the classroom that, you know, will be interesting to them or pique their interest and giving parents tools. You know, everybody's not a teacher, of course, but giving them basic tools that they could, you know, educate their kids when they're not in school. And then political education is simply what it is, learning the political world, finding out the people that represent us and how do we support them so our voices can be heard directly in our communities. We already know starting with local elections are affecting us more than anything else. So starting with who are our commissioners, our, you know, who are our councilmen, who are our committee women, committee men, you know, who's over our district, state representatives, how do we champion the things that we care about in our neighborhoods? Also looking at urban planning. You know, I have an issue in my, and I live in Vineyard, and I have an issue right now at the Vineyard Park on the street that's going there. There's no sidewalk on the right side of the street. Now, the speed limit says 25 miles per hour, but people are coming through there hitting 40, 50. You know, yeah, there's no stop signs, no police over there, nothing like that. So they coming through hitting 40 or 50. No stop signs. Kids are forced to walk in the streets. So I've been trying to figure out how do we get sidewalks. So, you know, learning about the PIAC forms online, like simple things like that. Who do I talk to about that? Can I just tweet the mayor or do I have to go through a process, you know, to learn? Do I call Brandon Ellerton or whoever? How do I do those type of things? And then sufficiency, you got self-sufficiency. It's basically being able to depend on you and the community that you're in more and more. Becoming more and more sufficient on the things that you can do, the things you have, and what the others around you have. Food sufficiency. We already know we live in food deserts. I live in Vineyard. The only grocery store we had here was Leon's that sadly closed. It was one of the oldest black-owned grocery stores in America. And there's five corner stores I could think of that I could walk to, two gas stations, nothing nutritious, nothing healthy at all. So there's an alternative that we can get to with growing our own food, community gardens, things of that nature. And a lot of these things have already been in place, so I'm going to talk about that at the end of this. But so food sufficiency, and then skill sufficiency. There was a report that talked about how America basically needs people to go back out and start learning trades, start learning skills again versus going and trying to get you know, your doctorate degree or whatever, but going and getting those physical things that we can help each other with. And also learning about who already has these skills in our community. Who's the roofer in our community? Who's the plumber? You know what I'm saying? The electrician. We don't have to call somebody from Johnson County that doesn't know about our community. And we want to find somebody that we can support directly that lives next door to us. And then community sufficiency goes back to the neighborhood defense, making sure your community has everything that it needs right there within your community. Perfect example, Central Street in KCK, Wyandotte County. You ride up and down Central. The wonderful Latino community over there, they have a grocery store, they have a meat shop, they have a law office, they have a gas station, they have a barbershop, they have everything that they need. They can literally walk down the street and get everything they need right in their community. So that's community sufficiency. The last is investment. And investment, first of all, I want to start with co-ops, co-op initiatives. I really think that working together, man, is just a beautiful thing. Being able that all hands can be on you can have multiple people that are putting in to a pot to grow something greater for everyone else. Dre Taylor has something like that with the Kansas City Forum Co-op right now. I think they have some land, or they're growing stuff out in Swope Park. Of course, he has the Nile Valley Aquaponics on Wabash. And then business investment, learning about business, being able to talk to a guy like Chris Good. You know, how did you get started Ruby Jeans? How can I start a successful, healthy restaurant right in my community? Things of that nature. And then art and culture, of course, we know that we got to have the art and culture. Art and culture is huge in Kansas City and for us specifically. So being able to invest in those things, invest in local artists and what they're doing, finding the local muralists that can paint something to represent your community, a local artist. When you have an event, who are the local singers, the local rappers right in your neighborhood, right on your block? Generational investment, life insurance, having something that you can pass down to the people that are coming up under you. That goes a lot into home ownership and things of that nature as well. But even more, skill sets, family businesses, family history, genealogy, things of that nature, learning about those things and where we can locate those things in our community, neighborhood history. You know, I talked to Miss Betty that lives down the street from me. She has she had a daycare, and her husband passed recently in the recent years. And just every time I talk to her, you know, she's just full of life and everything, but she knows so much about this community. And I've only been living here for 9-10 years. You know, she's been here for probably 20-30 years, my next door neighbor. He told when I first moved here, he told me everybody that lives in our community. He's like, okay, that couple across the street, they've been here for 40 years. You know, he was a pastor. Yeah. This guy down the street will do, yeah. You know, so getting back to those things and investing in that and having that information to pass down to whoever else moves into this community or whoever else is a new addition to your family, et cetera. So that's what Protect Ourselves is, and those are the pillars. Now, a lot of these things are already happening, I want to
stop on those pillars. We need to take a station break, but we're going to come back and dig deeper into it. Professor Lowe has a question for you as well, but we'll take a station break. If you're just tuning in, this is Ebony's Bones, and we are talking with Royce. They call me Sauce Handy. You may know him from his rap game and other things that he does, but he is the founder of Protect Ourselves, which is asset community-based development, and it's a grassroots movement, and he just described the four pillars to us. If you want to call in and join in on this conversation, you are more than welcome to. The number is 816-931-5534. Again, 816-931-5534, and Ronkia Bates will put you through. We're going to take a station break, and we'll be back after this. All right, and we are back here with Royce Sauce Handy talking about Protect Ourselves. And Professor Lowe, you had a question, comment?
Yeah, and I like what you're doing, bro. And I have a couple of questions based off of because I read your points earlier on Instagram, and I had a couple of questions. Now, again, I want to throw this, like, I'm with you on a lot of this. I was listening to you were talking about sufficiency, right? And you provided, like you said, the Mexican and American neighborhood in Kansas City, Kansas, correct?
Yep.
Right? How they had their own stores, how they had their own businesses, right? Well, it's no secret that most Mexican-American communities are able to self-sustain themselves based off of voluntary segregation. That means they've segregated themselves voluntarily. So my question would be, do you think that we can actually build a community without actually having people live in it? For example, you know, one of the stigmas for black communities is that once black people get to a certain professional level or a certain economic level, they tend to look at the black community as something that is subpar. So how can, and I was having a conversation with somebody about this last week, can you actually have a nation building or create a black community when black people don't live in the black community?
Yeah. So when I'm saying community, I mean just like all African-Americans who, you know, literally commune with each other. But when I'm looking at a neighborhood, I'm thinking of literal neighborhoods. So Vineyard, Ivanhoe, Blue Hills, etc. So to that point about Central Avenue, I don't know exactly what neighborhood that is or if that was done by a neighborhood association or whatever, but I'm a firm believer that Black Flight has hurt us more than White Flight could ever could. And that's why I like the asset-based approach, because you're locating what needs, you're locating what you need based on what people are already doing, but you don't know because we're so spread out, we're so disconnected from each other, we don't know our neighbors, we don't talk to each other, you know, things of that nature. So, yeah, that I guess that's what I'm getting at with that. And I think that if you go by neighborhoods, you can do something like that.
I agree.
And when you start building it up like that, you're able to attract people back to those neighborhoods.
I agree.
Especially young people who, you know, if I'm a young man and I'm growing up in Kansas City and I've been through poverty and Leon's closed, there's no groceries, why would I don't want to live down here?
Right.
You know, so of course I'm going to move out to Johnson County, Lee Summit, Blue Springs, Grandview, Olathe, Leawood, et cetera, or wherever else I can. But at the same time, I'm taking all of my talents, all of my my good to the neighborhood or the community that literally needs me right down here, to a place where, you know, I feel like I have some type of sense of safety, but I might not even be wanted out there.
Right. That's
a whole nother thing. But yeah, so I do think there has to be some type of a relocation piece to something. And being able to attract people back into the community, and there are some groups that are doing that in Kansas City already.
See, and I agree with you on that. I was trying to explain to the young lady that she asked me, well, you know, how do you feel about the current climate? Will it change? And I told her it's not really going to change because Black people don't really want to live around other Black people. And when I explained that. There is almost a which usually when I explain that in most settings, there's usually a defensive mechanism where people automatically, instead of looking at the topic or what my argument, they start automatically coming back into themselves. Where, well, the reason why I left is because of this, or the reason why I left,
yeah,
or, you know, when I explain to them that in order for you to have a Black community, for example, if you want good Black schools, then good Black schools are primarily coming off of tax money, tax dollars that are collected based off of your property, usually
right.
Property taxes. But if you don't own or you choose not to move in or live in those Black communities, like I said, then you don't care about what grocery stores are available, because the access to you have access to grocery stores, right? You don't care about other businesses because you are actually like providing other businesses. And Black people get mad at me because when I say that the whole purpose of supporting Black business is now out the window, when those Black entrepreneurs then move to white communities, then you're doing the exact same thing that white people do, that we complain about white people doing in our community. So I just wanted to ask you that. I got another question too.
You ready? Go ahead.
All right.
Yep.
So I hear you about a defense, right? And historically, I don't like why we have the Second Amendment, because it was primarily used to marginalize and maintain or make sure they suppress slaveholders and Native America, or slave rebellions and Native American uprisings. But I do not think that we need to get away from the Second Amendment. As long as racist white people have guns, I think Black people need to have guns as a necessity. My question to you is, when you talk about police, do you mean defending ourselves against police officers as well?
I don't know if I mentioned police, but
well, I'm talking about defense. I'm sorry. I meant defense. When you mean defense, are you talking about us defending ourselves against the police as well? And then what would that look like? What do you see that looking like?
I see that playing out not good at all, because I mean, anything like that. The police are too powerful. They have way too much power. And they have too many layers of things that protect them to be able to literally do what they want to do. So I'm not like thinking in that way. So that's why I'm thinking about the laws, et cetera, et cetera. But the reason I like to defund the police, abolish the police movement and their ideals is because they know that the scope and the size of the policing needs to be reduced, and our contact with the police needs to be spaced out so that we can have the opportunity to protect ourselves, to get back to a place where we don't have to depend on them. We would have to depend on us. And I think that black people specifically are perfectly capable of doing that. But when your communities are over-policed, the police do have a certain type of power where you can't even tell them no before they beat you for being, you know, resistant. I don't think that, defending in that manner would be, you know, a good choice right now. But what I am talking about with defense is defending yourselves from racism, everyday crime, and making yourself feel safer and protected. And, you know, in my community, in Vineyard, we've had one shooting on my block since I've lived here, and that's been in 9 years. Police are never down here unless it's an elder person that has, you know, had a heat stroke or something like that. That's the only time I've seen police down here. And the one time that we did have a shooting, one of my neighbors, somebody tried to rob him, and thankfully he had his gun on him, and he shot back, and they ran off or whatever, and he got it all on his camera, so the police, you know, didn't do anything about it. But he immediately came to all of us who he saw had lights on in our house, they were up, and knocked on the door and said, "Hey, I'm sorry about the shooting. Somebody tried to rob me. I defended myself. I just want to let y'all know what's going on. If you see this car right here, this person right here, you know, this is what you should do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And that was the first time that anybody has ever done that to me. And I grew up in Wyandotte County off 5th and Quindaro, shootings every day. And that was the first time that a neighbor has ever come to me in that way. And these are the type of things that have inspired me to say, well, you know, we can defend ourselves.
Right.
And we can protect ourselves in our own neighborhoods, in our own communities.
Right. And I'm with you on that, because honestly, I mean, listen I'm hearing you describe your neighborhood, and what it sounds like is that you live, if not around the corner, then definitely not too far from me. I also reside in what we refer to as the hood. But mm-hmm. I'm with you. So, and like I said, I mean, I talk to my neighbors, and that's why I don't feel like I live in necessarily a bad community. It's our community has a stigma because it is over-policed. But then again, yep. I'm like this. If you, until black people are willing to defend themselves against the police brutality is not going to stop. Now, that does not mean that we got to use weapons. I mean, we don't necessarily have to use weapons. But, I mean, to look at the George Floyd tape, and you see how comfortable those people are with a crowd amassing. Like, they don't look they don't look worried. They know that nobody's going to step off that curb. And until police officers don't have that comfort saying, well, if I kill this person, this situation might get really messy for me really, really fast. And until police officers are faced with that type of reality, I don't think that police brutality is going to stop. Me personally. Now, my question, because I'm with you on defunding the police, right? Or policing ourselves, like you and Ebony were talking about. But my question is, like I said, coming from neighborhoods like ours where I know people that might be doing other types of activities, what does that look like when we're policing ourselves? Like, I'm curious, and I'm not against it. I'm just curious on what it looks like.
Yeah, so I haven't dug too much in the actual policing ourselves, like having like our own, I don't know, police force or something like that. But I do think that if the police are reduced and what's the word I'm looking for?
Ebony, you too. I want to hear what you got to say. No, I don't want to put you. This is not just. I'm not putting pressure on you, bro, because this is to Ebony as well. Because I'm with it. I'm okay with getting rid of the police department, but I'm coming into a roadblock when I start thinking about how are we going to police ourselves. Like, how can I do that?
Okay, let me say, and Sauce, I want you to finish your comment too. But I just want to say this quickly. What I mean, what I'm just talking about is, you know, just the movement of defunding the police going on and policing being the issue itself, the way that it it was originally created and the way that it is playing out. Mm-hmm. What I mean, the reason why I wanted to have Sauce on is because to me, this is us developing community in the sense that you're creating safety because you are creating community. Like, I think those things go hand in hand. So I'm not saying we just want to then duplicate and have a police department. No. Yeah. I'm saying that to me, us protecting ourselves is that initiative to say, hey, we can resolve conflicts, we can know each other, which helps with the stranger danger fear and in various things of that nature. We can pull together and have the resources that we need right where we are, and that's us looking out, taking care of ourselves. It's not thinking that anybody needs to necessarily be, not to say that there aren't times, because I mean, Sauce talked about having defense, like understanding self-defense, but to me, it's not replacing police departments as much as it is reestablishing and rebuilding community, right? So that we do feel comfortable right where we are. Our children can play, on the block, all sorts of things that are a natural environment for us to inhabit.
Right. And I'm curious, what were you going to say, Sauce?
I was going to say, and I love Ebony's point. I was going to say, I think that once we start seeing, and I might be wrong, but I think that once we start seeing the role of the police reducing our everyday lives and our contact with them in situations that, especially that they're not trained for, et cetera, that we will have the breathing room to be able to get back to having community in that way where we have safety, et cetera. Like when you ride out to Johnson County in these nice communities and there's no police riding around block by block, sitting at gas stations, just waiting for people. That's a rare thing. And it's kind of like, well, how do you get to that?
Okay. No, I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt, bro. Go ahead. My bad.
No. I was just saying, man, I think Ebony hit the nail on the head.
Because I think that money, one of the things Michelle Alexander writes in her book, The New Jim Crow, is she talks about the military style of policing and the funding, how the funding keeps going on up and up and up during the crack era, much like the funding for the military keeps going up and up and up during the Cold War. So she starts explaining how these police departments are able to get military style weapons, military style protection, military style uniforms, all this based off of their connections and their, like, the ability to use all this military stuff that's not being used and bring it on and get on more money in order to fight quote-unquote drug wars. But when we look at communities like Johnson County versus like Blue Hills or Ivanhoe, like you can't look at those communities and then not think about the racism. Like I was explaining, go ahead.
We do have a caller. I want to get a caller through. We're going into the latter half of the show. Caller, you're on the air. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and go ahead with your question or comment.
Freddie Malone is my name. I'm here from Kansas City. I was listening to another show on KKFI, and I've been thinking about buying some property, moving back into the neighborhood. And they had a gentleman and I think some ladies that were doing something on that line to help get financing to renovate the property and the home and to help someone get in there. I am a veteran, so I was wondering if you have any information of anyone that I could call that could help me in my pursuit.
Sauce, I'm going to let you answer that question off air. Thank you so much for calling, sir. We'll let Sauce answer that question as we clear the line.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Okay, Sauce, go ahead. Sauce?
Yeah.
You could go ahead with your answer. I was just clearing the line from the gentleman that called.
Oh, okay. The Green Line Initiative, I believe is what it's called. I believe that's here in Kansas City. I'm actually about to do something with them. But... I'm looking it up to double check to make sure that's what it's called.
One of the things while you looking that up, Sauce, that I liken when we start talking about protecting ourselves, that I liken it to community gardens. I'm not going to be so worried about the grocery store if I have what I need in my own community. I'm not going to be so worried about if they going up in prices, if I can't get there, if I can't, you know, like whatever. If my community has what I need in that community garden, then the grocery store becomes less and less relevant. I'm not saying everything. I'm not speaking in absolutes, but I'm just saying that it's bringing stuff back home. That's all.
Ebony's trying to carnivore shame me again.
This has nothing to do with being a carnivore.
Because, and I hear you, but the thing about a grocery store is like, what happens if people like chicken, like me? I mean, am I supposed to raise a chicken for them? Like, I'm not disagreeing. I'm completely understanding. I'm just saying that, because I believe that in order to have a black community, you got to have black people moving back there. Well, the black people with the money have to eventually come back to the neighborhood. And it can't be a individual thing. It got to be on a mass level. Otherwise, it's not going to be viable, because we won't have the cohesion, and the cohesion to bring the economy. Then we can have our own grocery stores. We won't have to be relying on everybody else.
We do have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and go ahead with your question or comment.
This is Kurt from the East Side.
Thanks, Kurt. Go ahead with your comment or question.
The professor asked, what does community policing look like? When I was new to this community, it's a black community, I saw a man and a woman arguing, and the woman was slapping the man. Eventually, the man took off and hauled the woman and slugged her, and her head booked back, and it was just totally unproportional. I called the police. They wanted to know what color the perpetrator was, and I said, what difference does it make? I just want you to show up. If it's going, if it continues, you know, put an end to it. And before long, other members of the community showed up and calmed the male down and took him away so the police could not find him. And that's what community policing looks like. I have learned not to call the police.
I agree with
Thank
that.
Thank you.
No,
Thank
I
you
so yeah.
And Thank
I,
you. We appreciate that.
I agree with that, and I mean I hear that. My question is like on major levels, like, and I'm with that, especially with that example, because I've seen that happen in my community where the community, especially the older people in the community, are able to calm people down so that the police won't actually come in there, and then it might escalate. But my question is, what do you do with the knucklehead, like the real knucklehead?
We do need to take a station break. Sauce, were you able to find that information
right
for the other caller?
It's the Green Line Initiative. Right now they have an initiative trying to building new houses in areas like Phyllis Wheatley, et cetera, helping people find housing, find homes. They're also really connected to the art community in Kansas City as well, and they're doing a lot of great work. So look up the Green Line Initiative, and I'm pretty sure they can help with the question earlier.
All right, thank you so much. We're going to take a station break. And if you've just tuned in, this is Ebony's Bones, and we are talking to Roy Sauce Handy, who is an artist and entrepreneur and the founder of the grassroots movement Protect Ourselves. And that is what we are talking about, protecting ourselves. If you want to join in on the conversation, Ronkia Bates will put you through, 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534, and we'll be back after these messages. All right, and we are back here on Ebony's Bones. We do have another caller. We're going to put the caller through. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question, your name, where you're calling from, your question or comment.
Okay, talking to me, correct?
Correct.
Okay, my name is David. When you talk about the police and so many police in the white neighborhood, not so many police in the white neighborhood and a lot in the black neighborhood, the reason why that is, the police in black neighborhood, they're really trying to help because they know that a lot of black folks going to act up, steal, shoot, rob, you know. And once we learn how not to rob, steal, shoot, and start loving more of each other, things will change. The police will move out. They're going to do what they're supposed to be doing, protecting and serving.
I have a question. question, David.
But since we got to fight one another and shoot one another, police is there to try to help or separate things, get things in order. So, you know, no more shooting going on or no more robbing going on. Because they rob and shoot in the white neighborhood as well, but we do it more.
Question, David.
David,
I have a real quick question. Are you saying that just to be clear, you saying that black people commit more crime than white people?
Well, I think they do, because I'm black. I heard about six shootings in the last couple of days. None of them showed me that there was a white person. Or the other way around. If they are white, they don't show the picture anyway. But they showed the picture of all these shootings that we had last couple of days.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. We appreciate that. I want to, Sauce, I want to move on to some of the other points that you have made as far as some of your other pillars. Like, can we talk a little bit more about co-ops? Some people are unfamiliar with that term. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. So it's a co-op in Jackson, Mississippi that I love called Cooperation Jackson. Their mission statement is building a solidarity economy in Jackson, Mississippi, anchored by a network of cooperatives and worker-owned, democratically self-managed enterprises. And they have various initiatives up under this one call. But I think it started with labor labor initiatives. But they have forms, they have landscaping co-op, they have a community land trust, they own over 30 properties. They're trying to bring waste management, recycling, security, arts and cultural production, construction, skilled laboring, auto repair cooperatives, food service, healthcare, childcare, and they're building their own economy, working together and I guess sharing the ownership over these things and being able to have resources for everyone. So like when I first learned about them, I had never heard anything like that. But there are a lot of other cooperatives out there as well that are doing things. In the art community as well, not just with labor or anything like that, but like various types. So that's what the co-op is. It's short for cooperative. Look up Jackson, Cooperation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi. I think what they have going on is very dope.
We had maybe a couple of months back, we had a guest, Dr. Bruce Strobel Jr., who deals a lot with environmental social sciences, and he talked about us understanding how to use social capital more. And you talking about co-ops and this whole grassroots protect ourselves initiative is causing me to think about that now, because he said, you know people, and you all, and we do this anyway, naturally. We just don't necessarily think about it like that. But these are all sub economies, you know, of, yep. Hey, I got this, you got this, let's exchange, or I'll watch your child and you drive me here, or you do this. And we do these sorts of trades and exchanges all the time. So it's, you know, it's something that we naturally do. I just think it's putting a little bit more organization to it and more focus to it.
I got a question. Have you guys, especially because I wrote this down when we were looking at investments, have you guys heard of the SUSU?
I haven't.
SUSU. I have heard of that. I think it has like an African origin, right?
Well, that's what it says. It's like you put $500 in and you allow for two other people. You got to get two other people to put $500 in, and it starts paying out after X amount of weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of scams going on up under the guise of that. But I think an actual SUSU is described as like a savings club or something like that. And, yeah. Like, I know it's, like, real big in, like, Caribbean areas. And I don't know how popular it is here. I know in Kansas City it's getting popular now. Some people are just like scamming people, but there's a real like savings club shared among people who are involved in it that I guess has been working. I'm not totally sure, but I have heard of it.
I see, and I've heard of it as well. I don't know if it works. I want to see some verification. Supposedly I'm supposed to be seeing some soon, but yeah, I was curious how you felt about that as far as like in your investments. That came to my mind when I was reading investments, so I was curious.
I think that if it's legit and it's genuine and you got people that, you know, that have that mutual common goal, I think it's dope. I think it's a great idea. It has a cooperative feel to it. You know, everybody's coming together for a mutual goal and helping each other out. So, I mean,
we have about 7 minutes left. I want to still invite people to give us a call at 816-931-5534. Again, 816-931-5534. We do have another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and then go ahead with your question or comment.
And this is Kurt again from the East Side. I'm wondering, there's bail for black offenders, and I was wondering if I put money into that. I appreciate what you said before about the Susu investment, and it might be a scam, and you're going to look into it. But if I put money into bailing people out, am I guaranteed to get my money back? Have you looked into that at all? Thank you.
I don't know too much about that at all, personally. Yeah. I know some groups that I do trust that are actually getting people out. But I don't know how the money works.
Sauce, are there any other main points that you wanted to discuss as well? Something that I'll put out while you're maybe giving some thought to that is, I also appreciate what you said about the generational investment and connecting with, you know, generations before us and right where we are and the generations coming up under us, because there is something to be said about shared wisdom, shared innovation. You know that it kind of, the connection between past, present, and future, if you will, and people being able to talk from all three positions. That's something that I feel really will enrich our, not only just our dialogue and conversation with each other, but also our imaginations and what's actually possible, because we could, you know, we can prevent making mistakes that have already been made. We can gain wisdom. We can learn how to use new and upcoming things, you know, from younger generations. But that has to happen with us being more intergenerational on purpose.
Right. Just a quick story. You know, my biological father, I didn't spend a lot of my childhood with him. Him and my mother divorced early on, and you know, he would get me like 2 weekends out of the month or something like that. But I got kicked out of my house and moved in with him when I was like 16, and we had a good relationship. I learned a lot of things, but he was an entrepreneur, always on the go. And you know, when I became of age and moved out and got married and all those type of things, he was living in New York, and he's been living in New York the last 8-9 years, running his own thing or whatever. And he moved back to Kansas City, has a property down here in KCK that he's been working on fixing up. And, I needed some repairs around my house. And I'm like, man, I don't have the money right now during COVID to pay somebody to lay this floor, to do these walls, to do this new trim that my wife wants. I got to figure it out. I remember my dad is like a handyman on the side. He know how to do carpet, sheetrock, all of that. He's been over here the last month. He spent more time with my kids, with my wife and me, than the last 8 years. And I've learned how to lay floors. I've learned how to do trim. I learned how to paint more effectively. I've learned about sheetrocking and a lot of other things. I have no labor skills at all. All my skills are creative. I have no labor skills, but now I do. And now I'm like, yo, I can make some money. If somebody needs some floors done, I know how to do it. I can work the jigsaw. I can work the handsaw, the floor saw. I know how to do all those things. And that's what I mean by, like, generational. Like, mm-hmm. it's so many things that he could be passing down, and now he is, but so many things that we could be passing down, our parents, our grandparents could be passing down to us in that nature. And people are doing that. But, like, I know so many, it's such a gap there that there's a need. Like, even knowing about the history of our families and the things that our grandparents have went through, I sat down with my mother's mother. She's from Shreveport, Louisiana. I sat down with her a few years ago, and I did an oral history on her life, and I learned her family were sharecroppers. Her grandparent, one was a Native American. Like, learning all of these things just enriched me personally, because I want to learn about history, and learning about her personal history and recording her. Now I have that forever. I have her voice. I have her notes about her life, and I think that these things will just enrich who we are as people and make us love ourselves even more.
Because speaking to that as well, it helps us have a broader perspective and more of a personal perspective of who we are and what we have in us, as opposed to the imagery that we see coming from a lot of times mainstream media outlets that project images onto us and magnify smaller subsections and don't, you know, tell full stories. But once, like you said, you start hearing our rich history and what has actually come before us and before us and before us, then that makes a difference. It also makes even a basic difference with food. I know, for myself personally, and I know maybe some other people too, with COVID, and people had to start getting a little bit more creative, you know, about what to do with food and different things. And, you know, I did start thinking about, you know, my grandma used to do such and such, or, you know, just different things to know how, okay, you don't need to freak out about having to feed yourself or having to, you know, you can actually find some basic things that can be meals and items that can be inexpensive, you know, things mm-hmm. that you can keep, easy situations, but it's tapping into things that I think that we have valued on one level, but we've kind of suppressed it, being, I think, kind of overly visualized by, you know, oh, look at this, come out and eat, go do this, that, and the other. And then you start realizing the value and understanding your basic foundations. We're down to the final 3 minutes here. A minute before we transition for shows. But I want you to share any contact information for Protect Ourselves. We do have a link for people who are listening with the podcast on kkfi.org. If you go to Ebony's Bones, then you're able to see a link to Sauce's Facebook page, and then also a link to the Facebook page for Protect Ourselves. But is there any other contact info you'd like to share, Sauce?
Yeah, right now that's it. The Facebook is, we're still behind the scenes getting everything together. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to add that Protect Ourselves is not going to be just the organization within and of itself. We want to act as a resource point, not reinventing the wheel, but being able to collect people and point them in the direction of the work that's already being done, and then connecting all of it together. So if you see the logo, the little black thing in the middle are the people, and then the four things are all the things connecting together to protect the people on the inside. And that's what we aim to do.
Sweet. Any last statement, Professor Law? Are you good?
Look forward to contacting you soon and chopping it up and see how we can work together about this.
Yeah, for sure. Hit me up, bro.
I sure will.
All right, we appreciate it, Sauce. We ask everybody please to stay tuned for American Roots with Nick Spritzer, and then the Classical Challenge later. Sauce, we appreciate you for all you do in the community and for being able to share this information while it's still grassroots and still developing. We appreciate you for having the conversation with Protect Ourselves.
All right, thank you.
All right, have a good one. All right.